Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And whichever ladies may be listening. We're starting a new sugya today, a new subject, a new Gemara. This is from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin largely deals with the laws pertaining to the Sanhedrin, to the court of Jewish law. The great Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin Agadol, will be a court made up of 71 people, which would sit right next to the Beis HaMikdash, actually inside the Beis HaMikdash complex, and that was the place where they would be deciding and judging all sorts of areas of halacha, be it monetary law and laws of damages, or laws of Tumah and Tahara, and laws of purity and impurity. This was something which was equally dealt with by the Sanhedrin, by the Court of Jewish Law. So our lawyers, our dayanim, our judges, would not only have to be experts, more than experts, in the field of, commonly, what's commonly called law, but they would have to be experts in every single area of halacha, the whole of the Torah itself. So this tractate here deals with Sanhedrin and some of the situations, some of the cases which are brought before them.
Sanhedrin is 71 person. To have final decisions, all of them should be exist.
That is an excellent question.
Because too many people, sometimes somebody.
Yeah. So the answer is that the Torah tells us, "Acharei Rabim Lahatos," that we follow the majority. Okay. And this is the halacha. This is regarding the Beis Din is where the Torah says, "Acharei Rabim Lahatos." You introduce this concept of following of majority rules. It literally means, we follow the majority. The question is posed by the commentaries that just imagine a case. That Reuven is on trial for murder, and for murdering Shimon. Yeah, surprisingly. And so he's on trial for murdering Shimon, and after all the evidence and everything, and the edim, the witnesses have all been been brought forward, then the dayanim, the Sanhedrin, has to make the call. They have to make the final decision, and they all vote, and it comes out 36-35, 36 in favor of saying that.
I have to go. Excuse me. York has a Toyota out there, right?
Yeah.
Your inspection sticker, I think, expired.
I just noticed that, actually. Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll
thank you
for that service.
Yeah. So, cars need to be inspected every single year, even though they're brand new. Wow. That's interesting. In England, you have the first 3 years. 3 years for free. Okay, anyway. So if 36 people say that he's guilty and 35 people say that he's innocent, that's quite a split court. Yeah, what do we do?
Innocent.
Guilty.
Go with majority.
Majority.
Not a big enough majority.
This is majority. Is a different definition of majority. Sometimes one plus majority. Sometimes two should be 2/3.
Okay. So what you're raising a question, which is a halakhic question, which comes up in other areas, which is called when do we need a ruba de minkar, which means a recognizable majority. This is a case where we do not need a ruba de minkar. This guy would be killed. This guy is guilty.
With such a split decision.
With such a split decision. That is the reason, that is the reason why we are not allowed to have what's called a Beis Din Shokel. Beis Din Shokel means an even number in a Beis Din. Every Beis Din has to be an odd number. The smallest Beis Din is 3. The next size is 23. size above that is 71. We're not allowed to have a base din shakel. If you have a base din shakel, what could come out is that we're going to be even, 50-50. We can't have it 50-50. Yeah, you could never come to an answer. You know, it's possible to never come up with a din.
Who didn't vote or something like that?
I don't know about if we're not to abstain. I'm not sure.
No, abstention or something.
Yeah. Certainly not abstinence, because these the members of the Sanhedrin would have to be married. So that's one of the requirements. So you have to have an odd number in order that we can have a majority. Now the question that you're all asking is, how can this work? 36 people says that he's 35 people say that he's innocent. That's not a base din. Yeah, a base din of 72 that says, you know, that he's guilty. Yeah, the Torah tells us you have to have a base din hamachayev. The base din has to obligate this guy the death penalty. Has to say he's chayev. He did it. Yeah, he's guilty. So this isn't a base din hamachayev. Yeah, this is half of a base din, okay, a majority. So technically, how they explain the halachic mechanism of acharei rabim lahatis, of following the majority, is that when we say following the majority, we don't just mean to say that, okay, we've got a based in here, and there's a majority that say they're guilty, and a majority that say they're innocent, so we're going to follow that side of the majority. They say technically how it works is that the whole based in, if the majority, however the majority rule, the whole based in is called the name of whatever that majority was voting for.
So it's like...
So it means that the whole Beis Din is Mechayev. This is not just, you know, 36 people and 35 people. This is the whole Beis Din says that he's Chayev.
So it's like the Electoral College. Massachusetts gets 13 votes. Uh-huh. They always vote Democrat, so it doesn't matter if it's like 51% Democrat and 49% Republican. The whoever wins, the majority gets all 13 votes.
Lahavdil. Yeah. Yep. Because the whole, yeah, exactly. That's a very good analogy, a good muscle. Yeah, the whole Beis Din is called a Beis Mechayev. The minority is commander lese. It's as if it doesn't exist. That is nullified. It's bottle. It's null and void. It doesn't exist. We are following the majority to call the whole thing the majority. The halachic ramifications of this concept is that in other areas, which is the halacha is extended to other areas of halacha, this concept of roiv, of majority. One classic example is in kashrus. Yeah, the halacha is not as well known, this extreme case. Other cases are well known in terms of the concept of bittul, of nullification. But the halacha is like this: if you would have three pieces of meat in front of you, two of them one of them you definitely know 100% that it's treif. 100% it's treif. Your goyisha shopping assistant went to a treif store and bought a piece of meat, and two of the pieces of meat are kosher.
But you know exactly.
You can't tell the difference. They look exactly the same cut of meat.
You don't know what is it.
You don't know. Two pieces are 100% kosher, one piece 100% treif, they all look the same.
What to do?
Think you'd be able to eat it.
The halacha is acharei rabim lahatos. We follow majority.
But in this case?
What's the ramifications of following the majority over here? The ramifications are that you can eat all three pieces of meat. Because we're going to follow the majority to say, we're going to follow the majority and say, that it's the majority is that it's kosher. We don't just mean that, okay, for, you know, theoretical concept. No, practically, halachically, it means that the minority is commander lesa. It doesn't exist anymore. It's as if it's not there. It is the majority, is a part of the majority.
And we're going to execute someone on the basis of that also.
We're
going to
execute someone on the basis of that. You're going to be able to eat a piece of treif meat on the basis of that. Okay?
Oh, wow.
Because Arkady is a bit squeamish when it comes to this concept. Please, it's Treif meat here. I know it's Treif. 100% it's Treif. So Chazal, yeah, instituted a rabbinic legislation, a rabbinic sort of distancing from this situation, just because it's a bit, you know, a bit uncomfortable. There are three levels. There's a machlokas rishonim, not in the Gemara, but there's a machlokas rishonim as to what level they instituted. One opinion is that you've got these three pieces of meat. Don't eat them together. Yeah, don't cook them up in a stew and eat them. Yeah, not because it's not kosher. It's 100% kosher, which is, it feels a bit wrong. So what does it help by not eating it together? Because when you have piece number one, you'll say, well, this one's kosher. When you have piece number two, you'll say, well, this one's also kosher. The third one, that's the treif one. When you have the third piece, what do?
You figure one of the
one of the other ones, the one I ate before, that was probably the treif one. So you're never actually eating, you know, consciously eating treif. Yeah, you're able to be toiler. You're able to rely on the fact that it's in another piece or that it's already gone. Yeah, that's the lowest level of geder, of sort of fence to this. An upper level is that one person is not allowed to eat all three pieces.
Say that again.
One person is not allowed to eat all three pieces.
What's going on?
Because at the end of the day, okay, so I can be toiler, but at some point it's going to be, you know, revealed that I ate a treif piece of meat. So this opinion is, no, so we can't have it that I'm eating a treif piece of meat. So I'll have two pieces. Someone else can have the other one. When I'm eating my two pieces, I'll say, ah, he's having treif. When he's having his piece, he'll say, ah, I'm eating treif. Yeah, so none of us are actually consciously aware that we're eating treif. Again, this is not because it's treif. It's 100% kosher. Le Mahadrin. Yeah, Mahadrin min Mahadrin. Bedatz. This piece is Bedatz kosher. The highest level of kashrus. The Torah says it's the highest level of kashrus. Achre Rabbi Mahatis. We're following the majority. It doesn't exist. The treifness of it, the non-kosherness, has disappeared. It's 100% kosher. It is the majority.
But it's not kosher.
No, it is kosher, but it doesn't feel kosher. It is kosher, but it doesn't feel kosher.
No, but we said there's one piece is not kosher.
No.
It started off
not being kosher. As soon as it got mixed in with the majority and it was unrecognizable,
it's still kosher.
It becomes kosher.
But if this
it is... It got a blessing from the rabbi and it became kosher.
No, but... There is different kind of kosher. For example, there is one piece of beef can be kosher or not kosher. This kind of depend how it's killed. But there is, for example, fish. This is one piece is not.
This, if it's not recognizable, it's kosher. Could be a piece of chazer. Could be a piece of pork.
Whatever.
Could be a clam. If it's unrecognizable. It's kosher.
But there's a problem with that because those things would be recognizable.
Hmm?
Obviously, you had a clam.
Unrecunizable, it could be mixed up with some
even
gunk.
For
I don't
food
know
is
what clam
not,
looks
for,
like.
For yeah. Food is not allowed to eat. For example, pork, even this is pork, is not recognizable.
It's 100% kosher.
Now, this is similar to a firing squad when they're executing someone. Say there are ten soldiers with rifles, they give maybe one or two of them blank cartridges.
No,
so you can always justify that maybe your one was the blank.
No, you can't. You just told me there are 10.
I mean, there are 10
guns,
of which,
and there's only one or two.
One or two,
which are blanks.
Which are blanks.
Sure. Well, so, what's the majority of it?
But
what's the majority?
But what the purpose of that
is
that you have a feeling that maybe the one that you're shooting was the blank.
Well, you can't. There,
say,
you're 100% chayev.
No, let's say
because you follow majority.
Let's say you have ten guns.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
No, so this idea. Everybody believes he's
not the one doing it.
He did not kill. Somebody else killed.
This is as we call pulling the wool over your eyes, because we would say opposite. We'd say every single one of them would say they killed.
They have to assume that they killed. Yeah.
I mean, how could you even pull the wool over your eyes? There's only one of them which is they have to follow majority. Yes, psychologically as well.
It's the guy getting shot that has to make the judgment. So,
how many bullets do
you have?
If six of the bullets are blank and four are real, then after they all fire their guns, he's still alive because the majority were blanks.
I think four bullets hitting someone at the same time.
Anyway, that's the next level. The next level is that one person shouldn't eat them, because then he can be Taylor. He can rely on the fact that he didn't eat the tree. But the highest level says that still, you know, someone is eating treif. It's not treif. It just feels like treif. Yeah, someone's eating what feels like treif.
But practically speaking, this is...
So according to the highest level of opinion, this is an opinion brought by Rashi, that you have to throw one of the pieces away. Yeah, you're not allowed to eat one of the pieces.
What one?
What does this help? What does this do? Which one? The treif one? No, anyone. But what we're going to say is, that was the, what I threw away was the treif.
So
one.
It feels a little better. It
feels a little better. Again, this is only for our feeling, because halakhically, according to the Torah, it's 100% kosher. Okay, that I hope answers your question. I don't remember don't recall what your question was.
No, but
that's the practical answer. You have three of them, one of which you know is absolutely glatt treif, and they're all unrecognizable, so you just take one arbitrarily.
If I remember rightly, I think that is how there are Mar Paskins.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's strange. There is so strict law about kosher. In this case, only because of majority, there's all laws gone.
Yeah. Okay. So that's... little intro to Sanhedrin. This is, now we're going to be studying let's just go straight into the Mishnah and we'll see what it's talking about. Okay, so the Mishnah over here in the 8th Perek, the 8th chapter of Sanhedrin, discusses a case of a burglar who is tunneling into one's house. What is he allowed to do? So the Mishnah says, Habobah Machteres. A person, in fact, you know what we'll do? We'll first see the Pasuk in the Torah, and then we'll have a look at the Mishnah. So on the inside margin, on the right hand side, right down the bottom, you have a little thing. It might be two small letters. Is that two small letters?
The Torah or?
Yeah, the Torah or Hashalim. Is it too small? Barry, can you make it out?
Yeah.
Professor? No. Do you want to get a...
The little...
Oh, okay.
Got it. Yeah, okay. So the Pasuk in the Torah says, Im b'machteres yimotzei haganav. If in a tunnel the ganav, the thief, was found... the hooker, and he was hit, struck the mace, and he died. Ein loy damim. He does not have blood. Im zarcha hashemesh alav. If the sun dideth shineth upon him, damim loy. He does have blood. Shalem yishalem. He shall surely pay. Im ein loy. If he does not have. V'nimkar b'gnevasei. If he does not have, he will be sold in his stealing. Do we have any cryptologists?
Meaning what?
Meaning what?
That means there's blood to be revenged.
Oh, so what does this mean? In Bebach Teres Yimotzei Ganav, if he is found in a tunnel, have you learnt Bebach Teres before? Okay. You've learnt some Torah. Very good. In Bebach Teres Yimotzei Ganav, if the thief was found in a tunnel, Vuhuka, and he was struck, Umes, and he died, Ein Loi Damim, he does not have blood. What does this mean?
You don't have blood.
Meaning?
It means
you won't be hived.
His relative not allowed to kill him. You
can't go now.
As revenge.
Is the relative of the thief?
Yeah.
Is he allowed to kill you as revenge? Okay. So what's the law of the what you're talking about? What you're talking about is the Goyel Hadam, which is the avenger of blood. Yeah. The halacha is that if you kill someone intentionally, then you, if you murder someone in cold blood intentionally, then you die. Yeah, you're killed for that. If you kill unintentionally, yeah, the example which the Torah gives is you're chopping wood in the forest and the head of the axe comes off and finds someone and hits them and kills them. So the halacha is you have to go to an Ir Miklat. You have to go to a city of refuge. If before the prescribed time, the appropriate time to get to the, after the prescribed time to get to the Ir Miklat, you're still hanging out, you know, outside, or if you decide to leave, then a Goyel Hadam, the Avenger of the Blood, is allowed to come and kill you. Ki Yecham Levavi, when his heart, when his blood starts boiling, he's allowed to avenge the blood of his, right? What are we talking about? What case, though, are we talking about? What sort of killing?
Unintentional.
Right. Yeah? The Goyal Adam, the avenging of blood, is only for an unintentional murder. Manslaughter. Yeah, over here, this wasn't unintentional. This was, he hit him. But intentionally.
But not purpose to kill, maybe?
Maybe.
Matters. I think it's just sort of the hive.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the Torah is distinguishing.
Yeah,
Daniel.
I was going to say, just to go back a step, if you did kill intentionally, you still have to go to the refugee city until a Beis Din calls you. Like,
is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's also in the morning. Uh-huh. So if you do that, also, like, let's say, you know, like...
So it's after your judgment for death, you go to the refugee camp, they kick you out.
Yeah, so I think it's the revenger of blood, Goyel Adam. It's, he'll only be permitted to kill you after you've gone to Beis Din. So if you kill unintentionally, they say you have to go back to the Ir Miklat. You have to go back to this refugee city, and if you're, it's intentional, they kill you on the spot. So it's only after the... Mm-hmm. It's after the initial ruling. Because before then, you don't know if it was intentional or not, the rule. Very technicality.
Right.
Now, who was the Torah Orin?
I don't know. I mean, the Torah Or is not a commentary. The Torah Or brings wherever the Gemara brings a source from the Torah Or brings the whole verse. That is the Torah. So I don't think it was necessarily a person. I think it was just compiled by the editors over here. Okay, so in Bemach Teres Yimatzei Ganav, if the thief was found inside a tunnel and he was hit and he died, Ein Lo Damim, he hasn't got blood. So I think Akari might have been saying something like, he doesn't have blood on his hands.
Well, this is not good. What do you mean, blood? He killed him without...
I think the Cardi's right. That is what it means. He doesn't have blood on his hands. He's not responsible for it.
No, yeah, but what's that suggestion? The blood, not for person who was killed, but person who did kill. It means he is... avoid punishment.
Okay. So, okay, good. But good. You were pointing out, though, that it could be that this Ein Lo Damim could be going on either.
Yeah.
Right? Ein Lo Damim could be on the person that killed or on the person that was killed. So how would you explain it by both of them?
I would assume that if you had to explain it by both of them, it would be the person who was tunneling underneath in the tunnel would not necessarily be called a ganav at this point, but the person that killed him also would not be chayev on any punishment because it was an accident. And you could just assume if someone was tunneling under his house, it would be a ganav. Although it could have been...
Okay.
In either way, because I'm assuming...
But what does it mean that if we're going to say Ein Lo Damim, if it would be on the tunneler?
On the tunneler? He wouldn't be able to get revenge. I'd think that since it was in the dark, because, I mean, another pasuk comes to talk about when the sun is shining on him, so if it was in the dark, I would assume that this Ein Lo Damim, would be that he wouldn't be high for anything, he wouldn't be able to get revenge for anything, because it was done in the dark, it was an accident. Would be. Right? They would be the complete opposite.
Actually, let's try and take a step back. Right. Has the Torah told us anything about the din over here? We say, if a ganav was found in a tunnel, and he was hit and he died, he doesn't have blood.
In a tunnel, it's your home or where is it?
We don't know anything.
No, but thieves want to steal something.
He's tunneling into somewhere.
But it means he steals something not from you, but somebody else?
We don't know anything.
But who knows who is he is thief? Why you believe?
How do we know that he's a thief?
Yeah. If you go to your home, there is one thing, but if you're outside your home, it's...
Okay, very good. Okay, so Akadi is making an inference that, in order to be able to call him a ganav, has to be, you've got to know that he's a ganav.
What you said is the first sentence, well, he was Balgrav. This means he tried to come to your...
Oh, no, he's already died. There's evidence already in his pocket that he stole something.
So he's leaving the house.
Otherwise, he wouldn't know he's a ganav. Maybe goyel. Maybe it means you don't activate the goyel.
He's leaving. He's leaving. He's coming to the house, or he's leaving the house.
He must be leaving. Otherwise, you don't know he's a
ganav. Read the verse.
Leaving house with your stuff.
It doesn't. Yeah, it's not clear. You're right.
Otherwise, you don't know he's a ganav. Isn't there also a principle of there's a greater punishment to someone who steals in private than to someone who steals in public?
Ganav as opposed to gazlan. Yeah.
Maybe is there a difference here?
Well, here he's doing it in privately.
Well, except for on the second side, they're saying when the sun is shining on, that could mean that he's doing it publicly.
Okay.
No?
Could be.
But any case, this is a...
But what's the Torah actually telling us? What is the halacha with this? He's tunneling in, and he was hit, and he's dead. Ein lo dam. He doesn't have blood. What does that mean?
There's no goel. Goel doesn't apply. Goel is not actively allowed.
Meaning
that his relative can't do anything about it.
Okay, but how about was he right to do it though?
Was who right to do what?
The guy who's not going to be killed by a relative.
We don't know who that is.
You'd have to bring proof.
You just told me that there's no relative.
The relative
isn't going to kill who?
The relative of the deceased doesn't have to go looking to try to figure out who he should go and kill.
Okay, that guy who we don't know, who we should find out, we don't have to find out whether he has to kill him. Was he right to have done what he did, or was he wrong?
Was he right to have done
what he did? Was he right to kill
him? The same guy that you said there's no relative that has to chase him down.
There's no relative. Well, there's a relative, but he's not allowed to chase him
down. Okay, he's not allowed to chase him down. Why? Because he was right? Or do we still say that he did something wrong?
Who was right? Who is this he guy?
Who do you think?
I don't know. You have to say it. I don't know. There's three people involved here.
One of them's dead.
One's dead.
Okay. He was a ganav. Was he right? Definitely not.
Was a Democrat? No.
Relative, you just said doesn't exist.
He exists, but he's not allowed to kill.
He's not doing anything. Okay, so he's definitely not. He's the right person or wrong person. He's not doing anything. Okay. Number three is the person who actually killed someone, who did something in this case. Okay. Was he right or was he wrong?
Was he right?
We're saying there's no relative over here, but you haven't told me whether he was right.
But this
is done that. Whether he was absolved, whether he's guilty or innocent.
No, but question: if this thief deserved to be killed, maybe it's not crime to kill. For our perspective, this is somebody who still it's not so huge crime. For death penalty.
We don't ask if he's right or wrong, just like we don't ask was that piece of meat a treif or not.
Akadi is asking an amazing question. Firstly, Akadi is assuming that it seems like he was right to kill him. Right? If Professor is saying that you're allowed, there's no relative. You know, relative's not allowed to chase him down. Why not? Because he was allowed to.
I didn't say
so
that.
Then I can't know that was what our caddy was inferring. Okay. Yeah, because he said that. But hold on, is the punishment for being a thief being killed?
Sometimes we can't be recognized. You can't see. He's a certain distance from you. It's dark, it's white, it's fuzzy material.
Okay, let's see the first words of the Mishnah and see if it sheds any light on the matter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it says the Mishnah, Habo b'machteres, the one who is coming in a tunnel, not going. He's coming in a tunnel. Yeah, by the way, usually the breakdown, or always the breakdown of a Mishnah, is that first we introduce a case, a scenario, a situation, a tziur, yeah, a situation, and then we say the din, and we say what the halacha is in such a case. Yeah, so the case that we have is habab machteres. That's it. That's all the details that we have. Habab machteres, a person is coming in a tunnel. That's all we know. Habab machteres, what is the din? What is the judge? What's the court order? What's the halacha for habab machteres? Nidain al shem sofai. He is judged based on his end. That's the halacha. That's it.
What does it mean?
Would you just repeat that for me? I'm sorry.
The one who is coming in a tunnel is judged based on his end. That's it.
What does that mean?
And what's it mean, end?
On the end, on the outcome.
Oh, okay.
Because he's coming in the tunnel. He's not leaving in the tunnel.
Well, what's the outcome?
Is he a thief or not?
Maybe he's a murderer. Not a thief.
That's what it means. It's going to be proof.
We'll backtrack a little bit, and then it might give us a bit of an idea of about how this is working. This Mishnah over here is brought in a perek in a chapter called Ben Soirer Umayra. Last week's parasha. Yeah. Or yesterday's parasha. The Ben Soirer Umayra is a child who is wayward and rebellious. Yeah, in what way is he wayward and rebellious?
Doesn't listen to his parents. He eats, he drinks.
What way is he wayward and rebellious? Zoylel usoyve. He has a very healthy appetite for meat, half-cooked meat, and fine wine.
A glutton.
He's a glutton. Yeah, that is the way that he is wayward and rebellious. Yeah? So, and we know that the halacha is that the parents, yeah, they warn him, and if, and they warn him in front of a Beis Din, and if he still continues in his wayward and rebellious ways, then they take him to the Shaar Ha'ir, they take him to the gates of the city, and he gets stoned.
They also say this case never happens either.
Okay.
But when you're talking about this, is passing about child, it means child before bar mitzvah, it doesn't matter?
I think it has to be specifically, it has to be, the pasuk tells us ish. So, it has to be specifically, I think, in his final year of childhood, yeah, meaning 12 years old.
It means not 25 is not child anymore.
What's it called? Katan Hakarov Leishus, I think it is, or something. Meaning it has to be a child who is close to being an adult.
But
so not if he's if he's 6 years old doing it, if he's 9 years old doing it, it's not going to play. It's only if he's
very close to Bar Mitzvah. But before Bar Mitzvah,
yeah.
Not after. But what does it mean drinking wine before?
He has to drink a chetzi lug of wine, a half a lug. I don't know what the quantity
is. But in Jewish law, is not forbidden drinking wine before Bar Mitzvah?
You're allowed to drink wine. But this kid
Jewish law permits drink wine before 21.
Yes. Let's get that clear. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Before 13 also.
You know when a Jewish boy has his first taste of wine?
When he's at 8 days old.
8 days old, at his bris. He has wine. He's given a taste of the wine.
No, but this is kind of symbolic.
Let's say it is symbolic, but symbolically, he's allowed to drink wine.
It means nothing wrong to drink wine.
Absolutely nothing wrong to drink wine. It's not even a question of how much.
Passover, at least four cups.
You're allowed to have four cups. You're allowed to, you're allowed to drink a lot. But if this kid is having wine, a quantity of a chetzi lug, but not just a regular wine, yain ha'italki, Italian wine, yeah? And the meat that he's having is it's cooked in a certain way, and it's a tartimar of meat, like a very large quantity of meat. And in order to get this meat, he's been stealing his parents' money to do it, and he wasn't eating it at home, he was eating it outside of the home. Yeah, there are loads of qualifications. Yeah, this isn't just a simple case of a kid that's drinking wine. Yeah, this is a very, very specific case, which is exactly as Daniel pointed out, this is exactly why the Gemara says, Loi ben soira moira, loi hoyo v'loi nivra. There never was and there never will be a ben soira moira. So why does the Torah teach us this? For the message, for the lesson. What is the lesson, though? This kid is drinking wine and he's eating meat and we're going to kill him? We're going to stone him? So the previous Gemara, have a look at the Gemara at the top of the page. Tanya, it was taught in a Braisa. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Oimer. Rabbi Yossi Aglili asks the question, V'chi mipnesha ochel zeh? Because this kid ate tartimar basar. He ate a tartimar, a certain quantity of meat, v'shosa chetzi lug yaino italki, and he drank half a lug of Italian wine, omra Torah, yetze le Beis Din lisalik. The Torah says he's got to go to the Beis Din and be stoned.
Good question.
He drank a bit of wine and had a bit of meat. Chill, calm down a bit. Yeah?
What's the significance of Italian wine?
Very, very fine wine.
Okay.
This is Italian, directly in Hebrew, in Italian?
Yayin ha'italki.
But this is, in this time...
Which means Italian wine.
But I believe Italy was created way later than Gemara.
Rome was, yeah. I mean, the Roman, Roman Empire, but Italy was obviously already a nation and had fertile lands and
It wasn't a nation.
It was, yeah.
Italy wasn't even a nation how we know it now until the early 1900s. Yeah.
The Roman. I mean, you're talking, I think, about the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire is something different.
It doesn't matter. We were trading.
But it was. I mean, Roman Empire. Right, wasn't there in the time of the Torah, but it was there in the time of the Gemara. That was already the establishment of the Roman Empire was starting to turn.
Because now Italian wine is not high level.
No. Always changes.
Really? Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
This is French wine now.
Huh? Israeli wine, up and coming.
California wine.
California. Okay. Ella, rather, what are we saying over here? What's going on? We're going to kill this kid because he's got a healthy appetite? Or a little bit of an unhealthy appetite? Ella, rather, Higia Torah L'Soif Daitoi. The Torah reached the end of his mind. Came to understood the psychology of the outcome of such wayward and rebellious acts. What's going to happen? Shel ben Sarah Moira. Shesif, that at the end, the result, the outcome, is Megamar Nichse Aviv. He's going to start stealing his father's money. Umevakesh Limudei, in order to pay for his habit.
In other words, there's no end to this.
Ve'eino Maitzi, but he's not going to find. Yeah, he's going to spend all of his parents' money. Parents aren't going to have any more money. But he's got to have his basar v'yayin. He's got to have his meat and wine. So what is he going to do? V'yotze l'parshas drachim. And he's going to go out to the crossroads. U'melastem es abrias. And he's going to start becoming an armed highway bandit robber. And then he's going to end up killing someone in order to get the money to pay for his habit. Omra Torah, said the Torah, Yomus Zakai. Yeah, so 1 second, before this. Yeah, so what are we doing? What are we saying? We're saying that this kid, the outcome, the end of the day is going to be that he is going to be killing people. That's what's going to happen. If we let a kid like this carry on in his ways, he's going to end up being Melastem Es Abrius. He's going to end up killing people.
Potentially dangerous.
Potentially dangerous. Therefore, we give him a status. Yeah, the Torah The Torah goes, looks at the outcome, and he's given a judgment based on this, based on his outcome. The question is, though, what did he do? I would understand if he actually did, you know, he did something. What? Maybe he'll change. Maybe he'll. What we're going to kill? He's not deserving of the death penalty. How can we kill him? Yeah, the Mises based in the death penalty, which is given out by the based in. You have to be deserving. There has to be Adim. There has to be witnesses. You have to actually be chai of Misa. You have to be obligated to death. This kid is not obligated to the death penalty. He didn't do anything that obligates him to the death penalty. So what is his punishment? How can we punish him with this?
Yeah, because ultimately, if he does this behavior, he will be high of the death penalty.
That's not enough to say we're going to punish him with death. For a death sentence as a punishment is for something that's deserving of the punishment. This is not deserving the punishment. Whatever you want to say is going to be his outcome.
But this comes from Torah. Torah said directly this is deserved to be killed.
Fine, but what's his... We have to understand, this is halakhic reasoning here.
Do you believe there is a reason?
Of course there's reason.
But practically speaking, there is no reason because there is no...
Not practically, but we have to know the theory for this. So that if in practice it would come out, we know what to do. Let's have a look. The Gemara continues... Omra Torah, in this situation where this kid is on a slippery, the slippery slope, he's starting off and it looks like he's going to end up killing people. Omra Torah, the Torah says, Yomus Zakai, Va'al Yomus Chayev. This kid should die meritorious, he should die righteous, and he shouldn't die Chayev. He shouldn't die obligated, he shouldn't die as a murderer. Essentially, what the Gemara is explaining is happening over here with the Ben Sayra Moira is that the death penalty that we're giving him is not a punishment. He hasn't done anything which is deserving of this punishment.
It's a chesed.
Yet.
It's a chesed. Yeah, it's a kindness. That Hashem is helping him sort of get away, yeah, scot-free, as it were, before he's actually done anything wrong. Yeah, he's being let off the hook. Because the Torah knows, higia lasof daito, it comes to the end of the situation, and eventually he is definitely going to be killing someone. And the moment he hasn't, at the moment we can't do anything. We can't give him punishment. But the Torah says, Hashem says, I'd rather this kid is going to die innocent. So let's give him the death penalty now. Yeah, Yomus Zakai v'al Yomus Chayev. He should die innocent and he shouldn't die guilty.
It looks like human sacrifice.
No, not human sacrifice.
No, but this is to kill innocent people.
This is, by the way, this is God. Yeah, this explanation is only a hint of an understanding. We don't know, you know, what the real intention of this is. But this is, if we're trying to understand that technical halachic explanation of how this works, halachic reasoning, then this would be the halachic reasoning. Reasoning is Yomus Zakai v'al Yomus Chayev. Yeah, this is the technicalities of a concept called Nidoin al Shem Sofo. Nidoin al Shem Sofo. He is judged based on the outcome. Yeah, that is a punishment for a Ben Soira Moira. It is also how the Mishnah explains this case of Hababa Machteres. We say, says the Mishnah, Hababa Machteres, a person is tunneling in, Nidoin al Shem Sofo. Why are we bringing this case of the tunneling in? Because it's on the back of the Ben Soira Moira. Ben Soira Moira just is a case of Nidoin al Shem Sofo. We're judging him based on his outcome. This is also a judgment based on his outcome. Okay? That's a clue that we have to understand what the Mishnah means. So what does it mean over here? Habab Machteres. A guy is tunneling in and he's hit. And he's killed, ain lo damim. He, whoever he may be, doesn't have blood. Why? Nidoin al Shem Sofo.
Because he'll be judged on what the outcome would have been.
What is the Sofo?
He's going in a certain direction, and you're preventing him from doing it by killing him.
But the next step of Sifa is usually the killing.
Because that's where he's going.
Somebody stay in the wrong direction to stop him before he does something worse.
So Sofo doesn't really mean this particular instance. It means his Sofo. Maybe he'll be in another tunnel another time and he'll do something even worse next time or the time after that. His Sofo might be...
Well, eventually he's going to kill someone.
No, there are some thieves that never kill this. They have some rules. You want to steal money?
Okay.
Is it Kohelet that says better not to have been born? I think that's Kohelet. So.
No, but if you believe this is the same case with child, depend of kind of prevent to
as kill, a preventative
to kill before he might.
We're not necessarily we're not necessarily told that it's a preventative.
No, why is this two cases?
Because the similarity, the parallel is Nidoin al Shem Sofo. He is judged based on the outcome. Yeah, we're not told over here that yet. We're not told over here that it's in order that he should die guilty. Innocent as opposed to guilty.
Common in this case, what is the outcome?
Well, what is the outcome? What's the outcome of this case? Okay, let's. No. You know what? We're going to hold off a bit. We'll see to the end of the Mishnah, and then next week we're gonna start. Okay. We'll see. We'll see the scenario. We'll see how the case unfolds. So let's finish off the Mishnah. Yeah. Again, we don't yet understand the Mishnah. We're not going to understand the second part of the Mishnah, but we'll see it anyway, just so we have a bigger, unclear picture. Hoya Baba Machteres, if he was coming in a tunnel, Veshavar Esa Chavis, and he broke the Chavis. What's a Chavis?
House? A cask?
No, a barrel.
Barrel, good. We've seen barrel before. Come on, yes. We saw barrels and jugs. Yep. Hoya Baba Machteres, he was coming in a tunnel, Veshavar Esa Chavis, and he broke a barrel. Im yeshloi damim, if he does have blood, chayev, he's obligated. Im ein loi damim, pater. If he does not have blood, pater, he's exempt.
What is blood when he broke the vase? He can hurt himself?
From the mission, I can't tell.
This is classic Torah Shabbat Peh. This is classic oral Torah. This is a classic Mishnah, which was intentionally written extremely cryptically. Yeah, very cryptically.
So nobody understands.
In order to maintain and preserve the oral tradition. Yeah, the reason why the Torah Shabbat Peh, the oral Torah, was not written down in the first place, which we mentioned before, is that it should maintain a tradition. It should be from Rebbe to Talmud, from teacher to student. Yeah? At some point it was written down because they were starting to forget certain things. Yeah? But when they wrote it down, they didn't want to reveal it all and put it all, you know, lay it all out there. Yeah, because otherwise that would obviate. Is that the word?
He's the expert on.
What does obviate mean?
Cancel.
Yeah, it would obviate the requirement of having a teacher, of having a rebbe. Yeah. So in order to maintain that, you know, that rebbe Talmud relationship, that mesorah, the tradition of the Torah being handed down from past from generation to generation, it was written cryptically. It was written in code. So this is one of the most coded Mishnahs over here. Yeah. That just looking at the Mishnah, it's very, very difficult to understand what's going on. And until we start to pick away the surface a little bit and try to analyze, which we'll do next week.
There is
intentionally written by, cryptically
as code.
As a code, so that one should not just be able to, you know, read it and say, okay, I'm all set, I read the Mishnah, I'm done.
We concluded, this way of reading, who decided this is God?
What do you mean?
No.
But it doesn't make any sense.
No, but only because we don't understand it doesn't mean it's God. Maybe we are not able.
It doesn't make any sense. When we start asking the right questions, yeah, we'll see. But we're only asking the right questions because we have a tradition of how to, you know, interpret these things, and we have the Mepharshim, we have the commentaries that help us.
No, it doesn't make sense. Maybe what's called the reason makes sense.
No.
No.
Rashi. Yeah, you know what Rashi's job is? Rashi does not say anything which we would know. He doesn't say anything which we would know without him. Right, if Rashi is telling us something which is obvious, he's a perush, he's a commentary, an explainer. Yeah, a lot of his job is sometimes it's providing background information, sometimes it's bringing in another source or bringing a different version of the text. Generally, it's to hold our hand and help us with the explanation. If Rashi tells us something which we would know, yeah, without Rashi telling us, that's a red alarm. That's a red alert. That's an alarm bell is ringing, saying, "Why is Rashi telling me that? Without that Rashi, it's obvious." So there, we have to say, really, I'm thinking wrong. Something else should be more obvious. And Rashi is coming along to tell me this to show me that it's not something else. Yeah, do you hear what? So all of Rashi's job is to tell us that you don't understand what's going on here. I have to be. I have to unfold it for you. I have Russia, to unravel.
That's what Russia said about that. Also, he believes this is God. Russia commands this.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to see. Actually, the Gemara is going to ask. The Gemara is going to say, what's going on? What does this mean? Nidan al Shem Sofer. He's judged based at the end. Yeah, so we can once we understand what the answer is, yeah, then we'll be able to reverse engineer it back to the Mishnah and see how that was derived from the Mishnah. Yeah, but it requires we are required to have that tradition, to have that Masorah. Yeah, we can ask a lot of questions and we can make a lot of inferences, but if you don't have the right direction, you don't have that guidance and that direction to get there, then it's very, very difficult to arrive at the right destination. And that is exactly why it was written in this terse fashion. Yeah, terse means then there should be a lot more words in this Mishnah. Yeah, how can we understand the Mishnah? There's not enough words. There's not enough information. There's not enough detail. It just said what's the halacha? Hababa machteres. A guy's coming in a tunnel. Nidan al shem sofer. That's the halacha. He's judged based on the outcome. Give me more. Yeah, help me more. So we need the direction. Yeah, and we'll see the direction is provided by the Gemara. Then we'll see how we now knowing the right direction, yeah, meaning having the arrow already firmly planted in the tree, we can go ahead and draw the rings around it. Yeah, and build the target. Yeah. Usually, yeah, that's not necessarily the right thing to do. Yeah, but this is the way of Torah Shabbat Pet.
But this is, if you believe, this is really common to have line is not clear.
But this is all over the place. The whole. I mean, all that we why yeah? When we're having our class, we don't just read through. Why don't we just read through? Let's read through.
If it's clear, we're not learning.
The Gemara cites a brisa that elucidates our Mishnah's way. It was taught in a brisa that. Yeah, we could just read it and go on.
No, well, I usually believe this everything might be not so clear because there is different opinion for this. It's not because unclear, because anybody understand different way. But in this case, there is no any approach.
When we were speaking about breaking jugs and barrels, did you understand what was going on?
Practically speaking, yes. No, much better than this one.
Okay, a little bit better. But were you able to infer and understand from that Mishnah everything that the Gemara brought out?
No, but not. Obviously,
it's all included in the Mishnah. Everything is included in the Mishnah. All of that Gemara is included in the Mishnah. We're going to see, yeah, this two lines, yeah, one full line and two half lines, yeah, of Mishnah is. There's pages and pages. Yeah, pages and pages.
I think it was. I think one of the reasons why it was composed like that is because they had to protect it from people like the Sadduqeen.
Yeah, a whole page of Gemara is going to be discussing that. And when we say Gemara, we don't. Again, we're not just reading a few words. Yeah, even the Gemara has the depth. We've got all of Rashi and Tosfos and all of those commentaries on there, and all of those commentaries in there, and the ones at the back, and the ones on the shelves. And all of that is elucidating two lines of Mishnah. Meaning that it's included in those two lines of Mishnah. It's all there in the Mishnah. But we can't see it. You have to scratch. It's a scratch card. Yeah, you can't see it. You have to scratch away the surface.
Next week, we try to understand.
Yeah.
You're right.